Good afternoon, Brett Payton, attorney registration number 37127. On behalf of the plaintiffs' appellants, Preston and Blythe Bollinger, Ed and Donna Coulter, Dave Willem, Bonnie Schoenstein, excuse me, Glenn Willem, Bonnie Schoenstein, Dave Matheson, and Brenda Shelton, as well as the Mill Creek Homeowners Association. I'll refer to all of them collectively as the Mill Creek owners or the Mill Creek homeowners for the afternoon. While we recognize that there have been 9 issues that have been presented to this court, the primary issue that has been at issue between these parties through trial, as well as through this appeal, has been whether or not there is an easement upon what has been identified as Lot 10 in the Mill Creek subdivision that was granted to the Mill Creek owners. As a bit of background, Dennis Neal, through his company, Plainsview Development, created a subdivision known as Mill Creek, in which he created 10 lots, 9 of which were residential lots, 1 of which was an open area recreational lot on which he put a conservation easement. His idea from the beginning was to grant access and use of that Lot 10 to those 9 residential landowners. At inception, when he recorded his covenants, he indicated in his covenants that he would be putting trails on Lot 10 that would be for the use of the owners. As he went about his development of the subdivision, he represented to each of the owners that they'd be given access to Lot 10 and that they'd have a trail down there. He then created an amended plat of the lots, and specifically of Lot 10, for the stated purpose of making some adjustments to the road, but also to put on there an easement for the trail to be used by the Mill Creek homeowners. It's the plaintiff's position throughout this case that by showing that easement on Lot 10, on that amended plat, which he had signed by all of the Mill Creek homeowners, he was creating an easement. Walt and Carol DeWolf later purchased that Lot 10 and have since argued that no easement was in fact created. They've argued that there was no grant, there was no deed, there was no agreement showing an easement to go on Lot 10. The reality is that in 2006, in Allen v. Nickerson, this court recognized that there are two ways to create an easement. One is by express grant, that is by some type of agreement, by some type of deed, which reflects the grant of the easement, the grantors and the grantees. The second was by recorded plat. In that case, the developer had made similar promises, as we saw in this case, for certain driveway accesses. The developer failed to record any type of deeds, any type of grants. But the court recognized that throughout a common development plan, that developer had been repeatedly representing that an easement would exist. The same case exists here.
Let me stop you there. In Allen, didn't the recorded documents contain the word easement?
They very well may have.
Okay. Why isn't, if we accept the legal principle that a plat or a PUD can create an easement, why isn't the amended plat on its face ambiguous, and therefore we are bound by the trial court's findings on intent?
Well, I think the first issue is that Allen doesn't say that there has to be any type of magical language on the plat in order to create that easement. But more importantly, the purpose of a plat, and in fact the purpose of this particular amended plat, is to show those servitudes. In other words, there's utility easements on there. There are the various residential lots are shown on there. There is no other reason to show the existence of this trail on the plat if not to create an easement. Moreover, what Mr. Neal testified to was that when he asked his surveyor to draft this plat, he told his surveyor, put the easement on there.
He didn't. He used the word easement to describe the utility interest.
Well, actually, his testimony was, go ahead and throw the trail easement on the plat. And those are almost exactly his words. I'm not quoting precisely, but he did use the word easement. In his testimony, he uses the word easement twice to describe what he was telling his surveyor.
As purchasers, though, how are the DeWolfs supposed to look at the plat and understand that this trail is not marked easement, whereas other things like the utility is marked easement? How are they supposed to know without an express recorded agreement or without the notation of easement on the plat that that is, in fact, what that trail is, as opposed to just a physical feature like a pond?
Well, and that's actually the point of Allen versus Nickerson, is that the court was saying, look back at everything that the developer has done. You coalesce all of the documents which he's recorded, you coalesce all of his representations, and at the end of the day, just because he's failed to use the word easement or failed to record a grant does not mean the easement doesn't exist.
Well, driveways are a little different from a trail, in that driveways, when you would expect those to be constructed, a piece of land doesn't come with driveways in place, whereas it could be that there is a trail already in existence. Was there any evidence about that?
There was no trail in existence at the time that the plat was drawn. That was, in fact, one of the issues at trial, was whether or not a trail had been constructed. And in fact, there had been no trail constructed. However, the DeWolfs, based on testimony from trial, the DeWolfs clearly had notice that there was going to be a trail put on Lot 10. They, in fact, negotiated with Mr. Neal to attempt to remove that easement from Lot 10. They had Mr. Neal create a second amended plat, which nobody signed. He sent it out and he asked each of the lot owners to sign it, but none of them would. They recognized kind of what was going on there. He then, characterized, Mr. Neal, he then represented to the Neals, to the DeWolfs, that he would grant a license, which I guess his understanding was he would therefore be limiting that access of the Mill Creek homeowners. The problem is, if he's already created an easement, he can't then limit that by granting a license. So they clearly were on notice. They were clearly aware. They even took steps to address what they knew to be a trail on Lot 10. That testimony at trial is clearly dispositive. Mr. Neal was, as the court pointed out, he was telling all of the lot owners whatever he needed to in order to get those lots sold. If this court does not find that Allen v. Nickerson creates an easement here, as a result of that testimony, as a result of his representations to all of the Mill Creek homeowners, then an equitable easement has to be recognized on the property. Each of them testified that, in reliance upon Mr. Neal's statements to them, most of them, by the way, had read or had seen, knew that a conservation easement was on the property. They knew what that meant. Many of them purchased their properties after the recordation of the amended plat. His representations to them was, you're going to get not only access to Lot 10, by the way, but access to this trail going around Lot 10. And so each of them testified as to how much of a premium they paid for that, putting themselves in a worse position had they not known that a trail could not be constructed or the trail would not be constructed. Mr. Neal presented only testimony from one other person, in which that individual testified that he was doing work in the subdivision but was told to stop. Clearly, at some point, Mr. Neal, likely when he was selling to the DeWolfs, had decided that he was not going to build a trail. And as I pointed out earlier, as the court pointed out, he was telling whomever he needed to, he was going to tell him whatever he needed to in order to get those lots sold.
Council, but the recorded plat, would that be of any assistance to the owners of Lot A? I assume it would not.
The recorded plat, in and of itself, does not. However, in the conservation easement, Dennis Neal did reserve the right to grant access and use to Lot A as well. That's Glenn Willem and Bonnie Schoenstein. And throughout the process of developing the subdivision, that was always his stated intent, I suppose, was he at all times told them, you can go down and use Lot 10. In fact, there had been a history of Mr. Willem, the Lot A owner, using Lot 10. He had gotten down and done various work on Lot 10. I believe he testified that he had been working, helping Dennis Neal out, doing some work down on Lot 10 to mow some grass down, to manage those fields.
So is it sufficient that he just gave them oral consent to go on the property?
I do believe it is sufficient. You're talking about, again, Lot A or?
All in Lot A, yeah.
All in Lot A. He had reserved that, the right to grant that access to Lot A in the conservation easement. Obviously, as the property owner, he has the right to grant that oral access to Lot A owners onto Lot 10.
That would be binding on the DeWolfs.
I apologize.
That would be binding on the DeWolfs, that oral access, that oral granting of access.
Given that the intent was, this easement intent, was to also be for Lot A, Wollum and Schoenstein, they would be brought into that easement. They would get the benefit of that easement as well. So yes, it would, from there on, it would be binding on subsequent purchasers. That again is the purpose of Allen, is to say, this is a real estate interest. It is an easement that is ongoing.
While you're between issues, very briefly, do you seriously contend that Mr. Neal has personal liability on the breach of contract claims? That's kind of a yes or no question.
If you only want yes or no, I'll have to answer no. So, I'm at 3 minutes right now. I'd like to reserve that time for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'm Timothy Brinteson, registration number 20735. I represent Walt and Carol DeWolf. Now there's going to be several appellees, as you noted. I'm going to try and take around 5 minutes or a little more if needed to reserve some time for the other appellees. The appellant's principal argument in this case is that the trial court erred in finding that the members of the Mill Creek Homeowners Association and their neighbors, the Wollum, did not possess an easement on Lot 10 of the Mill Creek subdivision, but an approximately 100-acre open space that abutted all the subdivision lots and the Wollum's outlot A. It's undisputed that neither the developer nor the current owner expressly granted an easement to the homeowners.
You dispute the general principle that a plat or a PUD can create an easement?
No.
Thank you.
The homeowners have advanced two theories under which they argue they asked the court to recognize an easement. The first is that a recording the amended subdivision plat, which noted a trail, was sufficient to establish an easement. They second argue that the court should enforce an easement by estoppel.
With respect to the first argument, do you agree that there's no evidence in the record that a trail existed as a physical feature at the time the plat was recorded, the amended plat?
At the time the plat was recorded, I think Mr. Neal will probably testify that there was some sort of trail. There was clearly no constructed trail.
Did he testify?
I know he constructed a trail in 2006. At the time of the recording of the amended plat, I do not recall if he had testified to that or not. No. It's the DeWolf's position that the trial court was correct in holding that the recorded plat was not definite and certain enough in its terms to create an easement. In Hornsilver versus Trope, this court found that while there are no particular words that are necessary to grant an easement, the instrument that is relied upon for the grant of the easement must do at least two things. It must identify with a reasonable certainty the dominant and servient tenements. And secondly, the words must clearly show an intent to grant an easement and then to demonstrate that creation. Allen v. Nickerson, the case the homeowners rely upon in support of their argument, doesn't dispute that, but it also does not lower the standard for property conveyances that was set aside in Hornsilver. So whether in an express grant or in a subdivision plan or recorded covenants or a general plan, sound public policy requires that conveyances and real property meet at least this minimum threshold. In this particular case, the recorded plat, while identifying other easements, utilities, potable water, and access easement for the ditch company, conspicuously omits identifying the trail as an easement. It is noted as many other physical characteristics on the land, such as a pond or another access road.
But isn't that argument undercut if there was no trail there? I mean, I don't see how you can have that both ways. It was describing a physical characteristic, except there wasn't a trail there at the time.
Agree.
Okay.
Agree.
So if it's not describing a physical characteristic, what is the purpose of the reference? I believe the word is path.
Right.
Other than to create an interest that other people, from which other people can benefit.
I believe the evidence at trial showed that Mr. Neal understood that there was going to be, that he intended at some point to create a trail on lot 10 for the homeowners. He had been fairly consistent in telling them that they would have some sort of access. I think he intended to construct that at some point, as evidenced by the fact that he transferred licenses to them. He recorded licenses to them in 2006. So I believe that that is something he intended to do, even if he didn't create it at that time.
If that, assuming that was his intent and that could be shown sufficiently, is that in any way inconsistent with the easement that was granted to COL?
No, I don't believe it would be. He retained a right to grant access specifically to the homeowners and at the Outlot A.
So basically, you're hanging your hat on the point that there's no specific reference to that trail as an easement.
Yes. I believe that the case law and public policy requires that granting access is one thing. And Mr. Neal would have had the authority and the ability to do that under the conservation easement and as the developer. Granting a property right, granting an easement, which is going to bind both parties, is something significantly different. Simply noting a trail on the plat is not sufficient to do that.
Reference to the 20.
Yes.
Would that have been inconsistent size of the anticipated trail?
Yes, that would have been. The Colorado Open Lands testified at trial that in their mind, because the conservation easement would require any trail to be constructed to be approved by Colorado Open Lands. Their concept, in order to preserve the conservation values under the conservation easement, any trail could be no wider than a couple feet and limited to a small footpath.
But the conservation deed doesn't say that. The conservation deed
does not say that.
It contains no such limitation on Mr. Neal's right to grant access.
Right. Okay. Other than it would need to be consistent with conservation values. Next, the trial court was correct in finding that it should not enforce an easement by estoppel against either the current owners, Colorado Open Lands, owner of the easement, or the DeWolfs. The Restatement of Property Servitudes 2.10, Section 2.10, allows that a court could enforce an easement by estoppel in the absence of a written document in circumstances to avoid a great injustice. The trial court correctly determined that an easement by estoppel would not be appropriate in this case because it can be enforced only against an owner or occupier of land who actually made the representations. In this case, the DeWolfs and Colorado Open Lands would be the successors in interest, and there's been no evidence presented that the DeWolfs made any representations of access to the homeowners.
Didn't they have constructive knowledge that such representations had been made by virtue of the fact that their specific negotiating position was Mr. Neal's promise to change the documents so the other owners couldn't use Lot 10?
Yes, they had noticed that there was going to be a trail and that their neighbors were going to be able to access a trail on Lot 10.
Isn't that the same thing as saying they had noticed that their neighbors had been promised that access?
Well, again, there would be a distinction between allowing some sort of access and having an easement burdening the property. And so, again, you know, the DeWolfs would not argue that the homeowners are entitled to some sort of access, but enforcing an easement by estoppel is a different circumstance. So, really, in conclusion, the DeWolfs believe that the trial court's findings of fact, conclusions of law, and judgments in this case should be upheld.
Did the DeWolfs in the lower court make any cross claims against Neil or his company that were contingent if they were to lose?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Paul Schwartz, 29729 for Dennis Neil and Plainsview Development. With respect to the question that Your Honor Judge Webb asked regarding what the deed of conservation easement said, I just want to be very clear with respect to what the conservation easement said in respect to paths or trails. It said that what Mr. Neil could allow, and therefore what could be constructed with Colorado Open Lands approval and consistent with the conservation easement, conservation values, was non-paved footpaths. So that is important. There's uncontroverted testimony by the Director of Land Stewardship for Colorado Open Lands that what that meant was a 1 foot wide dirt or grass path. So in response to Your Honor's question, I just want to make sure that was clear. Given the time, I'm just going to touch on a couple of quick points, obviously absent questions from the court. With respect to the issue of plaintiff's supposed lost property value damages, based on the answer reply brief of the plaintiffs, which is the last word we've heard from them on this issue, it appears that their issue comes down to the argument that they should prevail, or the district court erred as a matter of law, because their testimony was uncontroverted at trial. And it's notable that they don't point the court, because they can't point the court to any testimony in which the plaintiffs testified in respect to any recognized methodology for calculating the value of real property. There was no evidence, they provided no evidence with respect to the sale price of comparable properties.
Yes, excuse me, it sounds like you're suggesting that although an owner can testify about property, they can only do so if they follow an accepted methodology used by an expert. Is that what you're saying?
No. They have to provide, they have to testify based on an acceptable methodology. It doesn't have to be one that would be provided, that an expert would use, but it has to be something that goes to and demonstrates the market value, the fair market value of the property, which is what a at-length buyer and seller would sell for and buy at in the market. They provided nothing of the kind. So there are established methodologies that experts use that non-experts can use. In the Denver Urban Renewal Authority case, Colorado Court of Appeals, the court held that the testimony of a property owner with respect to the his opinion as to the value of the property was actually inadmissible. Why? Because he based the testimony on prices relating to properties that were not comparable to the one at issue, and therefore were not probative of the market value of the property at issue. In addition, he based it on offering prices rather than sale prices of that property. So what the court is saying there is, yes, the law has established that a property owner doesn't have to put on expert testimony. He can do it himself. But like any other witness testifying and offering an opinion as to the value of property, it has to be based on information and data that is relevant to and probative of the market value of property.
So let's assume that the highway authority condemned Lot 10 and thereby took away the easement. Couldn't the named plaintiffs in that condemnation case say, testify that although I paid X dollars for my property, now because the easement has been condemned, it's only worth Y dollars?
If they have a basis for establishing what those Y dollars are.
And you're saying their ownership of the property is not such a basis?
That's right, because the issue is what is the market value of the property, or the property less that easement. And what a buyer, a willing buyer, would pay is not something that just comes to a property owner by virtue of his being the property owner.
Okay, if the highway authority condemns my house, can't I testify in that condemnation proceeding that my lot and house are worth X dollars, period?
Yes, I believe you're...
Okay, and how is that different from the highway authority condemning my easement, and then I say my lot and house are now worth X dollars less because my easement was condemned? What's the difference?
I think in both cases, Judge Webb, under the law, the property owner has the right to testify. Actually, I take that back. I think an argument can be made under the Denver Urban Renewal Authority case that if you're just giving a naked opinion in both cases, and you're not basing it on any knowledge or any facts of what is in the market, of what a willing buyer would pay, then I think it is inadmissible. But I also think we're getting off topic a little bit in terms of the issue in this case, because the issue in this case is not whether the plaintiffs had the right to testify. The district judge let them testify, considered their testimony, admitted all of it. He simply said, that doesn't persuade me. That is not enough to persuade me that they approved their damages by a preponderance of the evidence. I'm going to defer very briefly to Ms. Rock.
Thank you.
You have 13 seconds. If you wish to take a couple of minutes, I will give the plaintiffs a couple of minutes extra in rebuttal, and then everybody comes out on the same place.
Thank you, Your Honor. J.C. Rock, number 36717, on behalf of Colorado Open Lands, and I will be very brief. I only have one point to make because Mr. Schwartz made my other point. The plaintiffs in this case aren't simply asking for an easement. They're asking for an easement for the purpose of a 20-foot wide trail in a specific location, which is shown on the amended plat, for the purpose of hiking, biking, horse riding. And that is inconsistent with the conservation easement. The conservation easement requires that any footpath on the property be approved by Colorado Open Lands.
And doesn't that assume that the path would be improved? So suppose that there's simply a 20-foot wide strip, unimproved, natural vegetation remains in place, people can walk it, they can hike it, they can try to bike it if they wish, absent a trail surface. Why isn't your argument limited to the assumption that there would be some sort of surface improvements made, as opposed to simply setting aside that 20-foot strip?
Because, Your Honor, we would take the position that as soon as people are using an area on the property repeatedly in one area, it becomes a footpath. It's not limited to some sort of improvement. Something when people walk on a property repeatedly in one area and pad down a path, that becomes a footpath, and that's what Colorado Open Lands is concerned about on the property.
But isn't the conservation deed cast in that provision cast in terms of improvements, which implies to me something more than just mere use?
We would take the position that no, Your Honor, that it's footpaths. It doesn't say trail in the conservation easement. It says footpaths.
Writing of improvement.
Correct, Your Honor.
It also says grantor may construct non-paved footpaths.
Yes.
And I think under Judge Webb's hypothetical, there was no construction considered.
That's what I intended to say.
Yes, and I understand that. However, the testimony at trial was that a path, Colorado Open Lands considers a path to be or would approve a 1 foot, nothing wider than a 1 foot dirt path, and repeated use over time would create a one-foot path. Thank you.
Before you start your argument, let the bailiff put, okay, you now have about two more minutes than you had before, so.
Okay.
Fire.
Thank you. First, yes, Mr. Niels, counsel pointed out, it was undisputed that, excuse me, as the DeWolf counsel pointed out, it's undisputed that a plat can create an easement. You had asked about trail construction. I believe the testimony at trial was that Mr. Neal had begun to do some construction, roughly 10% worth, in what I believe to be the northeast corner of Lot 10, but that construction was never completed. No trail was ever fully put in place that could be used. To that end, with regards to Ms. Rock's discussion, Cheryl Wagner, during trial, did testify that she did not have to approve the use or access of Lot 10 by the Mill Creek homeowners. That approval is limited to the improvement of a trail, let's put it that way, in that she would approve a one-foot wide footpath, I believe she said 1 foot wide, of natural grasses and whatnot. The distinction here, though, is that approval of a footpath is not a contingency to the creation of an easement. In other words, Dennis Neal had the ability to grant an easement for some type of trail location. That does not mean that he had to construct a trail at that point. There are obviously claims against Mr. Neal with regards to his failure to construct a trail. But simply granting the easement does not therefore mean a trail would be constructed. Obviously, the owner would then have to go to Colorado Open Lands and get approval for what that trail looked like. Given Ms. Wagner's testimony that she didn't have to approve access to Lot 10, if the Mill Creek owners have both open access to Lot 10 as well as an easement to a trail, Colorado Open Lands, their conservation easement, does not stand in the way of those legal interests. They may have a say as to how you can improve that, and that's understood. That was uncontroverted at trial. None of the Mill Creek owners were arguing that the conservation easement should be abandoned.
So are you saying that the plat creates a property right for the possibility of a 20-foot trail, but that subject to approval, it might not be made quite that large?
That would be accurate. I think it wouldn't necessarily be that quite that large. And the characteristics of the trail, be it for the purpose of the argument, be it some type of crushed stone versus a buffalo grass versus an asphalt or a concrete, obviously those things, whatever that construction looked like, would have to conform to the conservation values as described in the conservation easement. And so therefore, yeah, whoever's going to do that construction, whoever that owner is, would have to seek approval of that improvement. But again, that you're right, that does not negate the real estate interest in Lot 10 via that easement.
And I take it the fact that the person from Ms. Wagner testified that they would only approve a 1 foot wide path is not conclusive. Your clients would still be able to, if necessary, I'm not suggesting further litigation be appropriate, sure, but that approval can't be unreasonably withheld, so they would be still subject to, it was not a final decision, her statement at the trial.
Absolutely, and I wouldn't characterize it as a final statement. I wouldn't bind her to that in terms of what could or should be built. You are correct. That is the language of the conservation easement, that it cannot be unreasonably withheld. Briefly, as to the damages issue, the testimony with, or excuse me, the argument with regards to whether or not a methodology needs to be created, the language actually from Plummer is that clearly an owner does not have to be qualified as an expert witness.
And I'd take that a step further and cite to Denver v. Hensley, in which the Supreme Court basically said, in order to do so, stands on its head the testimony of an owner. The court pointed out that when regarding the value of real property issues, unless there's a showing that the testimony provided is the type presumed when a witness is the owner of the real property. In other words, we don't hold the owner to the standard of the expert. We hold the expert to the standard of the owner. Thank you.